time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And good Thursday afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. We're live from the NHL store powered by Reebok. All of the Islanders greats who are here, they're here for the weekend celebrating the four Stanley Cup teams, the great dynasty of the Islanders. They have all left the studio, left the store. It is all ours now. Gary Bettman's getting ready to, I can see him, he's wringing his hand. You're ready. You're always ready.
It's good to be back. Although, what happened to you last week? I know Bill Daly was a great replacement, but what was with the phones? Nobody can see the facial expressions. On the radio.
get a headset and a mic in front of our executive producer, Greg Baldinger. Quickly. Okay, quickly. Greg, get in here.
Let me just say, phones are working now. They are perfect. They've been tested. We had plenty of phone calls before. I'll stake my reputation on it. How about that? Whatever that means.
Really?
Yes. I don't know if that's much, but that will have to do for now.
I did feel bad for Bill having to endure what was in effect an interview by you, Bill, for a half hour as you were trying to deal with the phone problem.
Were you listening?
I actually downloaded it after the fact from NHL.com just so I could see how badly I was missed or not.
Well,
you guys did great.
The conspiracy theory is that you planted a bug in the board since you weren't going to be here.
No. Actually, the theory is people probably assumed that it was a good thing it happened when I wasn't here so that the explosion didn't happen.
I thought of that.
Yeah, no. With age, I've mellowed.
Oh, the only thing that left me with a bit of an empty feeling after last week was the fact that our board was completely lit up and we didn't get to all the calls. We will try to make amends this week. Let me give out the phone number here. It's 877-NHL on XM, 877-645-6696. We'll also take emails at nhlhour@nhl.com. We'd love to chat with you. Gary's getting ready to answer your questions. And we want to talk about your week, first of all, which is a humdrum kind of week. A trade deadline Tuesday, testifying before a House subcommittee Thursday on Capitol Hill.
Wednesday. Today's Thursday.
Oh, Wednesday, right. Just a routine week, though.
Just another day in paradise. Last week we had the general manager's meeting, and I managed not to make it back in time to do the show. And again, thank you. But I spent Tuesday in Washington with the Washington Capitals, meeting with the organization, spending time with the local media, and going to the game on Tuesday night.
Before the GM meetings?
No,
was
this was
this Tuesday. So you weren't here as the trade deadline, the trades were coming in?
No, but I was on BlackBerry communication. Bill Daly was in the office with our team of lawyers and people from Central Registry who do such a terrific job, and there were no issues. I mean, in terms of what I need to do on trade deadline is really stay out of the way. We have great procedures. The clubs all know what has to be done to consummate a trade and coming through the league office with the conference call and getting all the terms right. And, if there's an issue, I'm, of course, reachable. And it was also fascinating because I did get to spend a little bit of time in the Washington Capitals trade deadline room where their scouts and their senior staff and George McPhee and Dick Patrick.
Was that a first for you? Had you been?
Well, normally I'm in the league office.
But you'd never been in a team room before?
I had never been in the team room before, and it was terrific to see. They had a very impressive professional operation.
And they were busy.
And they had a good day.
Yeah.
You know, they had a strategic plan, and they executed it. And it was very exciting. You know, it's interesting because as exciting as it was to feel the atmosphere in Washington, and I did a little event with partial season ticket holders at the Verizon Center before the game, and there was a great feeling of excitement and anticipation in the building because the Caps were very active as buyers. A year ago, I guess it was, I was in Edmonton on trade deadline day when they Whoa. Traded Ryan Smith, and things were a little less exciting for the fans. So the change in atmospherics was definitely noted by me.
But is there a trade deadline room, per se, in the NHL office?
Well, the central registry, you know, takes over whatever space they need using the computers. There are lots of people who take trades using their own office and coming together. Sean McLeod, who runs central registry, camps out. Normally he's based in Toronto, mm-hmm. but he camps out. And all the various people who take trades coordinate what has to be done. In case people don't understand what I mean by take trades, because we need to know the terms of all trades, because we want to make sure that both sides know the contracts that they're taking, because we need to make sure that if a team's trading for a draft pick, that draft pick is actually available. And in fact, because we have to approve all trades for the salary cap, when two teams want to consummate a trade, they have to notify us of the terms, and then we convene a conference call with a representative of each club and a league office representative who's authorized to take the terms of the trade and make sure that there are no issues or no disputes relative to those terms. It's, you know, it would be like if you and I were trading for our producer, Mr. Baldinger, and I said, I'll give you a third-round draft pick for him.
I'd say I'll take it.
And then a year later, you come back before the draft and said, no, that was a first-round draft pick. We want to make sure, not that that would ever happen intentionally, but we want to make sure that there's never any disputes as to what happened. Anyway, getting back to the week, I then spent Tuesday night in Washington, D.C., and met with a congressional subcommittee on trade, commerce, and consumer protection, who had questions that they wanted to ask the other three commissioners and me and the heads of the Players Association for hockey, baseball, basketball, and football.
What kind of experience is that?
It is.
Can you characterize it?
You cannot help but be impressed by your surroundings and by the process. And you know, it's the first time you do it, it's something that makes you a little nervous,
yeah.
But I've done it a few times, and you don't ever get used to it or take it for granted, but it's not quite as overwhelming once you've done it once.
This wasn't the same group, the same panel that had looked into the Mitchell report concerning baseball use of steroids and the Roger Clemens. This is a different group, right?
It's a different House subcommittee. We were before a House of Representatives committee, and this was a different subcommittee. This is actually a subcommittee, although the membership of the committee has changed from elections over time, but we appeared before this committee as a group, I believe, in 2005 to discuss some of the same issues.
What was resolved there? Was it strictly an information gathering session or an attempt to impress upon people the desires of some of the members of the committee, which is to legislate drug testing, et cetera, and steroids testing in all sports? What did they hope to accomplish with this?
I think there was an interest in how much progress had been made, what the leagues were doing to ensure that performance-enhancing drugs weren't being used in their games. You know, when we had these hearings in 2005, the work that was being done, the processes, the policies that were in effect are a little bit different than they are today. And since that time, we've adopted a drug program, which we were able to do in collective bargaining as we came out of the work stoppage. And we think we have a pretty comprehensive program. Can all programs be improved? Probably. But you know, that's something that we discuss with the Players Association on a regular basis. I think it was clear that all of the sports leagues had made progress over the last 3 years since we were last there. But my guess is there's probably still some work that can be done by all of us.
I hope you've noticed by now that there's no work required on our board. It is fully blinking and ready to go, and we ask the callers to make your questions brief. That way we'll get to all of you.
Does that mean when we call for a call, it's actually going to be there, or is this just some...
I'm assuming there's only one way to really confirm that.
Then what we're going to do is ask Sean from Queens, what's up? You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Wow, Commissioner, thank you for choosing me first. I'm a big New York Islander fan living in Queens, New York, and Commissioner, as you know, those are few and far between in Queens. However, I need to ask you guys about...
Wait, before you do that, we're in Queens.
Yes.
We're in Queens.
The Maspeth Middle Village area.
Oh, okay. I know it well. I grew up in Forest Hills.
Oh, okay. Our Lady of Hope. And Archbishop Molloy High School I went to. In any event, I am actually calling to talk about the Montreal Canadiens because this has been bothering me since Tuesday. Commissioner and Bill, I can't for the life of me figure out the Huey trade. When I first heard it, I thought it was very intriguing. To me, I figured, wow, this really signals they must think that they have Hossa in the bag, or they do have him in the bag, and they're moving salary. And then I was thinking, wow, I said, what? I'm expecting maybe Kolzig to be traded somewhere, if not Huey, to be traded somewhere else, because I can't imagine Washington keeping both goaltenders for the rest of the season. But, in you know, as it turned out, when nothing else happened with the Canadiens, and Carey Price is a great young goaltender. It worked once for them with Patrick Waugh going with a rookie. But why would they trade Huey and only get a second-round draft pick, your number one goaltender at the deadline, to get a second-round draft pick if there was going to be nothing else coming forth that trading deadline? Or did they wind up with egg on their face?
Well, I don't think they wound up with egg on their face. I think it's more a question that when the trading deadline's approaching and you're making moves, you need to look not just at the short-term run to the playoffs, you want to look long-term. I think Price is their goaltender of the future, and I think they've made that decision. Actually, in response to a question you asked me, Bill, what I also did this week was on Saturday, I was in Montreal for Bob Gainey's jersey retirement.
Oh, gosh, I forgot about that. Well, what a week for Bob Gainey.
Well, what a week for me. My traveling was a little more extensive than we thought. I think UA played that night and didn't have a particularly great game, gave up a couple of goals that perhaps they wish he hadn't. And my guess is, for whatever reason, they decided this was a trade that they thought long-term made a lot of sense. And what you don't know is whether or not they were working, and I don't either, on something else that didn't come to fruition.
My quick take on this is that Bob Gainey would never make a deal based on a deal that he hoped to make at a little later point in the day, number one. My take on it is this. If Bob Gainey is convinced that he's not going to win with a goalie, he is expendable. That, to me, is what happened with Cristobal Huey. And even if he's not sure if he's going to win with Carey Price, he will take that chance before he will sit with a goalie that he has made up his mind he cannot win with.
You know, I'm not a big fan of the speculation that those of us, I include myself now in sports talk radio, engage in, but I think that was a very good answer.
Knowing Bob, and believe me, you're never going to really find out what happened in this deal. Bob Gainey will take the inner workings of what his mind was thinking that day to his grave.
Well, and also the proof, as they say, will be in the pudding.
No doubt.
In terms of the performance of the player traded and the player not traded.
Yep.
Bill in Florida, you're next up on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Hello, Mr. Commissioner. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How's the weather down there?
Cold again.
Well, you don't know cold unless you're up here with us.
Well, trade. Okay, I'll give you that one for sure. I will definitely give you that one. But anyway, my comment is more on this congressional sub-hearings and all that, because when the Clemens thing was going on, I'm convinced that was a complete farce. The Senate was just grilling them. They were saying, oh, we don't believe you and all this other stuff. But I guess I'm just trying to get a gauge of I understand the sports organizations want to get serious about the steroids and fair play and all this. But what kind of impressions are you getting out of all this?
Well, I believe, and that's a terrific question, that all sports, whether or not they have a steroid problem or a performance-enhancing drug problem or think that they have one or don't think they have one, all of our fans, and I don't believe we have a problem in the NHL, but our fans are entitled to believe that our games are being decided by athletes who are performing based on their skill, not based on any enhancements that are illegal or in effect would be cheating. And what was clear from the hearing is that all of the four major leagues over the last 3 years have done more in terms of testing and their programs and punishment that gets meted out for players who fail, because we owe it to the game. And frankly, with athletes as role models, it's important that young people who are playing all sports understand that the way you succeed is with skill and hard work and teamwork and dedication, not that there's some magic pill or medicine you can take that will turn you into Superman or Superwoman. And if that's the purpose of the hearings, it's a good thing. There are many who have speculated that Congress could be doing other things with its time, and all of us who perform in public can be criticized for a variety of reasons. But the key thing is, and it was part of the discussion with the legislatures, we don't believe that federal legislation is appropriate. We don't believe that a one-size-fits-all solution in terms of what your program should be is appropriate, because all the sports are different.
Right.
All the sports have a different history, a different culture, and this is a sport that we believe hasn't had much in the way of steroid use, because it doesn't give you the attributes that make sense for NHL players. Our players, by and large, don't need bulk. Our skill players, they need speed and dexterity and agility and the like. And so what may be needed in one sport that may have a problem isn't necessarily the policy that would make sense in another sport. Why don't we take Tim in New Jersey? Tim, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hello, Bill. Hello, Gary. How are you guys today?
We're good. How are you?
Pretty good. I had a question basically related not so much to what was discussed yesterday during the committee hearings, but I got to see a part where there was maybe, for lack of a better word, an awkward moment where the representative from New York asked the NFL commissioner, brought up Spygate. And I was wondering, what is the NHL's policy on, like, scouting other teams or watching other teams' tapes or TV coverage? It's like, I'm a Ranger fan, so I use them as an example. The Rangers tonight play Carolina, and I was wondering, like, would the Rangers have to ask Carolina's permission to scout them, or at least make it known that they're going to scout them, or would Carolina just assume that, well, we play the Rangers, so they're going to have somebody here?
Well, our teams, I believe, have the option of deciding whether or not to open or close their practices. And if the practice is open, then you can assume that anybody who's in there is watching it. While our teams make extensive use of videotape for coaching, I think it's a little bit different in a sport where there are set plays being called every 30 or 45 seconds and there are different defenses and alignment. I mean, obviously our teams have plays and there are different defensive configurations, but I don't think you can compare what that does for you in the NFL, where they have hand signals, I understand, and the like. I'm not an expert on the NFL, versus our game, which is more a game of speed and motion.
The other thing is that at the morning skate, both teams participate, usually one at 10:30, one at 11:30. You can't have a closed practice since both teams are there, and that's very often when one team will put a little tweak into a power play. So
exactly.
It's fair game. It's open to the public.
No question. How about James in Florida? You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I have a question about the Lighthouse Project that Mr. Wong submitted to the town of Hempstead a couple of months ago. With the Coliseum being as it is right now, as I'm sure you both know from going there, is there anything you can do from a league standpoint to help speed up the process so this gets built? Because I know we offered a contract to Ryan Smith last year, and he decided to take less money to go play in Colorado. And I know some of the players have been quoted as saying that the Coliseum is not a great, you know, attractive offer for free agents. So I was wondering if there was anything that you could do from the league standpoint to help expedite that process.
We try. I know that Charles Wong is committed to doing what he can to get a new facility for the Islands, preferably the Lighthouse Project, but the issues of dealing with building a major project on Long Island with Nassau County, with the town of Hempstead, it's a time-consuming political process, and everybody's working through it as best they can. I have met with Nassau County Executive Tom Swazi on more than one occasion, and we're involved and helpful to the extent we can be. But this is a process, and we all know that the Islanders need a new building desperately. The future of this team depends on it, and thank goodness Charles Wong is doing everything he can to make it a reality, because not only would a new arena or renovated arena be good for the Islanders, the entire concept of the Lighthouse Project and the development of that area as a hub for Nassau County and Long Island is very exciting and important for the future of Long Island.
When you say lengthy process, how long has Charles Wong been working on this?
probably about as long as he's owned the franchise.
Which is how long?
A number of years. I forget what year he first bought it. His first year, when was the draft in Edmonton? You can help me out on
gracious.
That. That was, what, 5-6 years ago? Maybe a little longer.
So it is a lengthy process.
But look, you know, how long has it taken for Yankee Stadium and Shea Stadium to get their replacements? New York, and I don't say this critically, it's just an observation, is a place where the number of approvals you need to go through and the processes you need to do, it's time-consuming. It's not easy. But with the determination of an owner like Charles Hwang, the likelihood of it getting done is certainly much better than that.
There you go.
How about John on Long Island, appropriately enough? You're with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Commissioner and Bill?
Gary will work for me. Bill will work for him.
Yeah, you bet. We're doing great.
My concern is I'm a partial season ticket holder for the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden, and I've been trying to get a full season package, but I've been told that it could be years before that happens. And now with the advent of the Internet and StubHub and other ticket broker agencies, like StubHub's getting season ticket holders. They're getting a list of season ticket holders, and they're using it. I don't know. Maybe it's my opinion that they're using it to control the prices of tickets. And what is the NHL's policy on that?
Well, first of all, if I heard you correctly, you're telling me you would like to buy Islander season tickets?
No, New York Rangers.
Oh, New York Rangers season tickets. The Rangers, I believe, have been sold out every game and have a large season ticket base and waiting list. What happens with StubHub and Ticketmaster, there is a secondary market that's been created with the advent of the Internet, and it's really very difficult for anybody to control the secondary market sale of these tickets. Some teams allow it, some don't allow it, but the fact of the matter is when a team's tickets are in demand and hot, there's never going to be a shortage of buyers for them.
Phone number again, 877-645-6696. Our email address is nhlhour@nhl.com.
Melinda in Houston, you're with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Hello, sir. I called because earlier in the week there was a discussion on the War Room about selling ads on goalie jerseys. And then the discussion kind of morphed into the whole sellout business of selling advertising space or naming rights and all that. And the prevailing theme was that nobody was in favor of it, but they felt it was inevitable because what can the little man do? And so I'm calling you to tell you personally, I am opposed to selling ads on jerseys. I think that we can do something if we would speak up, and I just wanted to do that.
Frankly, I'm glad you called, and I respect the view. That discussion about goalie advertising is not one that started at the league level. It's not a discussion that we've had. It's my understanding from a conversation I had with Paul Kelly at the Players Association isn't this discussion that the Players Association started. My understanding is that there's an agent that began this discussion on his own initiative. It isn't the direction that we're focused on moving in, certainly at this point in time, and maybe never, because I'm not sure, you know, what would justify doing it. I happen to think that the sweaters in hockey are the best in all of sports, and it would take a lot, and I don't mean just money, for us to even consider doing anything to change, you know, their purity.
Just shrink when you're shrinking the equipment, just shrink it so much there's no room for advertising. And then it's a moot point.
That's an interesting take on it. Mike on Long Island, you're with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Guys, thanks for taking my call. Bill, no diss to you, but I want to just ask Gary a couple quick questions about NBC and also the NHL and Center Ice. But Bill, when you played for the Flames, being a big Ranger fan, you used to irk the hell out of me because you used to play so well against the Rangers in the 70s. A couple of quick points, Gary. I think the NBC has done a terrific job with the NHL. I've followed hockey since 1970. CBS, NBC, ABC, the NHL. I know when everyone trashes the NHL with ratings, They don't look at the whole picture. The NHL skews so well with the upscale suburban people. They don't have the demographics compared to other sports. They don't have a minority viewership. So when you take that out, I think the NHL is doing a lot better. The Rangers' ratings have doubled this year. So I wanted to get your comment on that. Secondly, also, how's the NHL doing in ratings on NBC this year compared to last year, besides the winter game? Center Rice, how come we don't have any post-game coverage? It just shuts down. I hear it's a legal contract, but who puts that legal contract together? The post-game is the best part of the coverage, especially on CBC and also Comcast. Is there any way that we can that could be looked at? I'd love to hear your comments on that.
All good questions. I loved your intro in terms of the view that people sometimes have, somewhat skewed about how we're doing, particularly in media. When we get criticized on national TV, I think people also don't take into account how well we do on local TV, and where we're very strong. More people overall are watching our games than ever before. Our ratings trend, I think we're even or close to even without the outdoor game. With the outdoor game, we're definitely up on NBC. And that's a good thing. And with respect to Center Ice post-game shows, some of it relates to satellite capacity. Some of it relates to access. NHL.com will continue to enhance its video capabilities. And so a lot of the press conferences over time will be available to you on the Center Ice package on NHL.com and on the club websites. This is something that the new technologies, the digital technologies, are giving us an opportunity to provide more extensive coverage, more content, more access to our game than ever before. So your concern is a good one, but it's one that we think we will address over time. By the way, for purposes of clarity, Charles Wong purchased the club in 2000. So
he's been working at it for 7.5 years.
Wow. I think the first couple of years he spent getting his arms around the franchise because he took over a little bit of a mess. And after he did that, he started working on the building.
Talking about network television, the NHL is on NBC this Sunday. And if you think these points are not important, you haven't been paying attention. It's the New York Rangers, the Philadelphia Flyers. Puck drops 12:30 p.m. Eastern. You can check your local listings for the station and time in your area. We're going to step out. We appreciate your patience. Stay on hold. When we come back, we're going to chat with the man that will be the color analyst for NBC for Sunday's game, Eddie Olczyk. It's all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com.
Something happened here. What it is ain't exactly clear. Come on, Evan. There's a man with a gun nowhere telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Wow, that was very nice of you to get me the Buffalo Springfield. You've made me feel 35 years younger.
That was a special request, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, I hadn't heard this live version before. That was pretty good.
I have not either.
Wow.
I just hope it's not our theme song, at least the first line. There's something happening here, and what it is ain't exactly clear.
Well, there's always a reason I like that song.
We're going to clarify. We'll get the gentleman that is joining us by phone now to clarify anything we want. He will answer any question. I know that.
Well, what would you expect from the person who is the third overall pick in the 1984 draft? What, behind Kirk Muller and Mario Lemieux? Ed, how are you?
Hello, Commissioner. Hey, Billy, how are you?
We're on with Eddie Olczyk. How are you?
Commissioner, was that you karaoke-ing the other night, or what was that?
No, actually, I almost got thrown out of a sports bar during the general manager's meeting for changing the TV station myself to a hockey game.
Throwing you out, the general manager?
No, they were there, and a number of the media, and I think they were somewhat amused.
Well, nice to be with you. Thanks.
It's good to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Tell people a little bit about your background. I'm not sure people know that you were born and bred in Illinois.
Right.
You had a distinguished hockey career, both on the ice and as a coach. You even coached Sidney Crosby a little bit. Give people a sense of your connection to the game.
Well, I'm lucky enough. I grew up in the great city of Chicago and lived and breathed every face-off, every period as a young Blackhawk fan growing up in Chicago from early 70s to, lucky enough, playing there my first NHL game in 1984. But I played all my youth hockey in Chicago and traveled around to Detroit and to Minnesota and played in all different tournaments in Canada. I was lucky enough to play twice at the Pee Wee Quebec tournament, I think, which is going on right at this time right now, which is an unbelievable tournament for kids 12, 13 years old to play in front of 16, 17,000 people, the old home of the Nordiques, and played all my minor hockey there. I left home when I was 15 years old. There's a lot of hungry hockey players to leave home and go pursue a hockey career. I played my junior B hockey in Stratford, Ontario, and played for the Stratford Cultons for 1 year, and I got a phone call to try out for the U.S. Olympic hockey team in 1984 in Sarajevo, and I was 16 years old during the tryout and was lucky enough to make the team then and played in the Olympics as a 17-year-old and was drafted, as you mentioned, in the 1984 draft behind Mario and Kirk, and played 16 years in the league and bounced around, and I owe everything that I have to the great game of hockey. I met my wife on an airplane when we were traveling from Chicago to New York, and it was a wonderful ride as a player and as a broadcaster, and as you mentioned, coaching in Pittsburgh for a couple years. And if there's no greater game in the world, as you guys know, and to be a very small part of it. And I think the one thing, and Billy, and working with Billy Clement for many years, is that the game where it is now, it's because of the players and the people that came before all of us, and I think it's important that as fans and as broadcasters and as players and owners and managers now, is always remember that, is that the game as it is today has to do with the people and the players and the people that have come before, and that's the way I kind of live my life in the great game of hockey.
We're talking to Eddie Olczyk. Talk about the transition from being a player to a coach. What makes it easy and what makes it hard?
Well, I think when I was going through that transition, I had retired in 2000 with the Blackhawks and a whole bunch of stops in between. And proud to say I played my first game in my 1,000th game for my favorite team in the Blackhawks. And I got the TV job in Pittsburgh and was able to work with the Hall of Famer Mike Lang there for 3 years. And I felt that I wanted to get back into the game from either the management side or the coaching side. And I went in and had an interview with Craig Patrick, and I was pretty much resigned to the fact that I was going to get a minor league job. I was going to go down to Wilkes-Barre and coach the minor league team, or at least have that opportunity. And at that particular time, the Penguins didn't have any coaches in the organization. They pretty much cleaned house and continued to clean house after I was able to get the job. But I think that the players of today are quite a bit different than maybe the days that Billy played or I played. And I think that there's a lot more of soothing and massaging that goes on now. And I think what I tried to do anyways is always let the players know where they stood on a daily basis, and no BS, and maybe you tell the media one thing, but the players and the team knows exactly where you stand. So I think probably the biggest transition for me was the day-to-day that went on, and you always knew as a player, you knew the coach's work, but you really didn't know exactly that the days were 18-hour long and really trying to prepare your team. And as Billy knows, as a player, you got to worry about one thing, and that's yourself. But as a coach or a manager, you have 23 players to worry about, not only how they're feeling but everything else that goes with being a professional athlete. So a lot of great challenges. I think it's made me a better broadcaster. I think it's made me a better person to know the ins and outs of what goes on a daily basis in the National Hockey League.
What's it like to coach a superstar in his rookie season? You had Sidney Crosby in his rookie season with Pittsburgh.
Right.
What was that like for you?
Well, I had Sid for 31 games, and I had the owner, who was our captain, and who at that time was my best player, Mary Lemieux, still playing as well. So I had really, I guess, when you know, 30 or 50 years from now, when people are talking about the greatest players that ever played the game, I was lucky enough to be a very small part of Sidney Crosby's first, you know, handful of games in the National Hockey League, and of course with Mario still playing. You knew exactly the type of player and the type of person that Sidney Crosby was, because he wanted to be the best, whether it was in games, in practice, and he was just a real pleasure to be around, and I really enjoyed the times that we had, just the one-on-one, the player-coach, the coach-player, trying to help him along, and just realize, because of demands of Sidney Crosby, not only today, but when he was a rookie in the National Hockey League and with the Penguins kind of trying to get back on the map, the demands for a young player. But he certainly is not only a great player, but I got a really proud chance to be able to know him, the type of person that he really is. And, you know, he wants to accommodate everybody and be the very best, and that includes in practice. And I know Billy's played with, you know, some great, great players in his days in the National Hockey League, and that's really what separates the really good players from the great players, is that, you know, it's every day. It's how they handle themselves in practice and off the ice, and it was a great thrill and a privilege for me to be with the Penguins, obviously, but to be a very small part in Sidney Crosby's first handful of games in the league.
We're talking to Eddie Olczyk. Speaking about working every day, you're a game analyst for Blackhawks local TV broadcast, as well as NBC and Versus. So it seems to me that you have an impossible schedule working and traveling every day. I want to ask you to talk about two things.
Sure.
One, the revival of the Blackhawks in Chicago, and two, what it was like being at the Winter Classic in Buffalo on New Year's Day.
Well, a lot of my friends tell me I have a face for radio. I don't know what the hell that means, but I think that when you talk about the revival in Chicago, you know, it just seems to have ignited with, you know, Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, with Rocky Wirtz coming in and really having a different perspective on how to do things compared to his father. Putting local games on television, hiring John McDonough, the new team president, and a move where you grab somebody that was so influential and so important to the Chicago Cubs. He had been there for 25 years, and I think just the immediate impact it made in the city to be able to get somebody of that stature away from the Cubs. Usually it's the other way around, but nobody would, you know, maybe go to the Blackhawks. But to be able to bring in a guy like John McDonough, I just think that it's a real positive feeling. There's been full houses there on a handful of occasions, and the bottom line is that the team is improving. They still have a long way to go, but I think that it's something that I know in the city and throughout the National Hockey League, a lot of people are happy to see, is that the Blackhawks are on the rebound. Being a part of the Winter Classic was tremendous, to be so close to the action and to really feel that it took a lot of us back, former players and hockey parents and coaches. It took us back to our roots, and that's where we all started. And I grew up in Chicago, as I mentioned, and I know Billy skated on many, many lakes and when there was no lights or anything, but to get a chance to go back and to really show what our game is all about, and it was great to be a part of. Doc did a tremendous job, and Darren Pang was in between the benches, and I thought it came across very well. And again, you work very closely, Commissioner, with the NFL and with the Buffalo Bills and with both teams, and I don't think enough has been said with that, is to be able to get that deal done and put it in a venue like Buffalo, 70-some thousand people there that stayed till the very last minute. And it was nice to order the rain and the snow and the wind, and it really made for outdoor hockey and really took us back to our grassroots, which is really what it's all about.
There was no rain. It was only snow.
Oh, that's right. It was in between sleet and snow, which the proper terminology is snow grains, which is G-R-A-I-N-S, snow grains. Because when I said that during the game, I had Keith Jones, one of our colleagues and one of Billy's former colleagues and does some games with him with the Flyers. He said, "Did you say no brains or snow grains?" So I said, only a guy like Keith Jones would be able to try to set me up for that one.
I remember being there and being overwhelmed by the fact that there were 72,000 people, most of whom were on their feet for most of the game. Was that something that you could feel down on the field alongside of the ice?
No question. It was a... It was an event. It was historical, and you know, the first professional game, the first National Hockey League game ever, and I was very envious. And I know Billy was there doing radio there, and we had talked, you know, many a times that, you know, boy, I would have loved to be able to be out there and to have played in that game, because we've all done it and know the importance of the game. And I think throughout North America, I think it was a, you know, it wasn't a two-run homer, it was a grand slam, and I think everybody really enjoyed themselves. But you could feel it, the energy, and I took my headsets off every once in a while just to really feel the electricity, and it was deafening, and it was just, it was great to be a very small part of, that's for sure.
On NBC, you typically work with Doc Emmerich and Pierre Maguire. Talk about what it's like to be with the two of them and adjusting to NBC's innovation of Inside the Glass, right, having the third member of the crew not next to you so you can't make eye contact, and you're talking to each other at a distance.
Yeah, it makes, I think, for early, I think it took for some exhibition games, so to speak. But again, I think you get a feel, and Doc Emmerich is the best. I mean, he is the traffic cop, so to speak, and to be able to, you know, work Pierre in, get me in. And sometimes, you know, you kind of just got to let it go. And Pierre is very emotional down there. He's very opinionated. And you know what? And sometimes you just kind of have to let the game breathe. And there may be times for me to just kind of sit in the weeds a little bit and not say anything for a little while, but it makes for, I think, an interesting point of view with Pierre down at ice level inside the glass, and then for me to be able to see things from upstairs, be able to break it down and not only talk about why it's happening, and that's the biggest thing that I try to get across when I'm doing games, is why is something happening or what was a player thinking, and to be able to tell people why and break it down on a telestrator and just have that, you know, have that communication or have that, you know, that debate of what's going on a nightly basis from shift to shift.
Ed, thank you for being with us. We're going to let you go so I can take some more calls, and please keep up the good work in all of your capacities.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. See you, Billy. Thanks.
Love you, Edzo.
Okay,
take care, buddy.
You too, Billy. Thanks.
All right. Again, our phone number, 877-645-6696. We want to get to your calls. We love chatting with Eddie Olczyk, one of the most genuine, down-to-earth people I have ever met, and it was a privilege to work with him, and I just keep my fingers crossed I'll get a chance to work with him again at some point. We want to get to your calls. We appreciate your patience. This is the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM204, and NHL.com.
We're going to do one more song, and then we're going to take a 10-minute break and then come back and play electric music and boogie.
This one's called If You Can't Be With The One You Love, Love The One You're With.
If you're down and confused and you don't remember who you're talking to, concentration slip away, 'cause your baby is so far away. And there's a rush in the distant dark, and the eagle flies with the dove. And if you can't be with the one you love, honey, love the one you're with, and come on, love the one you're with.
I could sit and listen to this all afternoon, Stephen Stills.
They're not as good live.
Well, actually, I don't think, with the possible exception of Neil Young, any of them was as good individually as they were as a group.
There you go. We got some callers that have been hanging on here for a while. We're gonna get to you guys right now.
James in Connecticut, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Hey, Commissioner, thanks so much for doing this. I think it's very cool that you have this kind of access with the real fans.
Well, thank you, and I think it's pretty cool that you hung on for 39 minutes.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a Leaf fan, so I'm used to hanging on.
That's a very good line. I may steal it.
Thanks. Anyway, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how you think Sundin handled himself with all that intense pressure on the guy and pretty much the city just in panic. And I, you know, further that, I wanted to know if you thought that he really damaged our chances to quickly put a better team on the ice.
That's a fair question to ask. And frankly, I do not fault Mats for enforcing his no trade clause. When a player negotiates a contract, there are a lot of issues and factors that go into it in addition to how long the contract is and how much money he's going to get. And some players sign a contract to be in a certain place and in many instances take less money, maybe not substantially, but take less money as part of the negotiation to get a no-trade clause. And when you get to the stage of your career and the stage of life, when you have that option and you've had that negotiation, there's nothing wrong with a player saying, no, this is what I bargained for and this is what I want. Nobody forces a team to give a no-trade clause.
Right.
And therefore, that's the benefit of the bargain, and I don't fault Mats with enforcing it. Whether or not it impacts the ability of the team like Toronto to rebuild sooner or later, that's anybody's guess, but that's one of the factors that a general manager has to take into account when he decides to give a player a no-trade clause.
Perfect scenario for the fans was Mats leaving, getting some help, draft pick a couple of players, then Mats coming back next year. If Mats doesn't come back next year, the Toronto Maple Leafs are not as good as they are right now because he's still a dynamic player.
Well, and also I think sometimes people are a little premature in writing off a season. I mean, the competitive balance and the races we're having this year are incredible. And if my memory serves me correctly, the Leafs are only 6 points out of eighth in the conference, which means this season is far from over.
Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something?
It would. Wouldn't it be something to California dream? Dennis from California, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Commissioner, a pleasure, a real pleasure to speak with you. And, Bill, I remember watching you skate for the Flyers. I enjoyed every minute of it.
You must be very old.
You know.
Well, 56.
Little respect.
Oh, actually, you're about the same age I am. Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, you just got a better paying job than me.
Well, I don't know what you do.
I'm in distribution.
Well, don't be so sure. Anyway, what's your question?
I'm sure.
Well, okay, just one thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, I heard you talk earlier in the season about, you know, these hits to the head and things and, you know, injuries and concussions. And, you know, I remember back before anybody had helmets and you hardly ever heard the word concussion. And there was, like when the goalies were just getting into the fiberglass masks and things, you know, you didn't see people headhunting, and now there seems to be a loss of respect among the players. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, a penalty should be called when you've got someone's head between a player's shoulder, stick, elbow, forearm, and the glass. You know, his head is not the bologna in the sandwich. Okay? I see so many hits to the head out on the ice against the boards. You have these new rules for obstruction to speed up the game. In the beginning, it was tough because you touch someone with a stick, and they call it. It was the phantom penalty, as it later came to be known as. But, you know, any kind of hit to the head should be a penalty, period. It'll bring everything down. Bring back the days of the hip check. I have not seen anybody throw an outstanding hip check in years.
Let me try and respond to that. First of all, this notion that any contact with the head should be a penalty doesn't take into account, among other things, the size of players. The ridiculous example that I like to give is if Zdeno Chara is checking me with a perfectly legitimate check with his hands at his sides, my head is going to be implicated.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Okay? Secondly, you didn't hear a lot about concussions in the old days, because the medicine and the diagnostics and the way players were treated who were injured wasn't as good as it is today. Lots and lots of things happened. There were lots of concussions, but they were never reported.
I know I had them and didn't know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you probably didn't know because you had a concussion.
I mean, after.
I know what you mean. I don't think it's a question of headhunting. Players out there have to be aware of what's going on around themselves. They have to protect themselves, not put themselves in a vulnerable position. And I think more importantly than anything else, the reason we have more concussions, in addition to the fact that they're being detected better and diagnosed better, is the players are bigger and they're faster. And when bigger objects collide at faster speed, the physics indicate that something has to give.
There is also far more, I would think 5 to 10 times more hitting now than there was when I played in the era of non-helmets. Way more hitting.
The game is much more physical, yep. and I would take issue with the phantom penalty comment. The notion of calling hooking and holding interference, the fact of the matter is we've opened up the game for more skill and more speed. And even if it doesn't look like you've yanked the guy to the ice because you put your stick on him, the fact is if you put your stick on a player, you're probably impeding his progress and making it less likely that he can catch a pass and complete a play. On that note, let's go to Joe in Saskatchewan. Joe, you're with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Yeah, hi, Commissioner. Hi, Bill. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm also a
long life Leaf fan. And Gary, a question that I have for you is on Leafs TV. I've been trying to get Leafs TV ever since it was put out, and my TV provider is telling me that the NHL doesn't allow me to get it, even though I'm in Saskatchewan and there's not a team within 1,000 kilometers of me yet. Do you know why that is? Or?
Well, because the Leafs are entitled to distribute their programming in Ontario, where the team is located. I hope you get the Center Rights package, and I hope you get the NHL network.
Yes, I do.
That's great. And beyond that, in terms of managing and running a league and having 30 franchises, teams can't do whatever they want, wherever they want it, and that we have certain rules and policies in place that deal with it.
Even though there's not a team anywhere close to me, it doesn't really matter.
That's why we're delighted that you get Center Ice and the NHL Network. Let's take Lou in Detroit. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Thanks for having me. First off, Bill, your work is top-notch. Been a big admirer of your work as a hockey player and a broadcaster.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
Gary, I want to thank you personally for making the NHL Network available in the Detroit area where I live. It's a great addition. My kids love watching the old games, and it's just a great resource. I'd like to follow up the caller from just before who was talking about headshots. I'm a doctor, I'm a coach, I'm a father, and I'm a player. And I really think that gentleman hit it right on the head. You know, you're losing great players because there's not enough protection and not enough respect for the space above the neck in your league. I have a very good friend of mine who's an NHL All-Star, and his dad come to me several times and says, "I'm glad my son doesn't play in that league anymore."
Well,
when you have that, you've got a problem. And I would recommend, you know, Paul Kariya has not been the same player since he got hit in the head by Gary Suter. There's one thing to be having incidental contact in the middle of a game due to a clean body check, but you've got something beyond that that borders on criminal, and that needs to be addressed. They've done it in the OHL. They've banned the headshots, and it's a penalty, and I think that's what you need to do in your league, and you need to do it now.
Two things. One, conceptually, I agree with you. There shouldn't be shots to the head, and in fact, we raised the standard this year, and early in the season, particularly on Bill's old team, Philadelphia, there were a couple of players suspended four shots to the head for very, very long periods of time, 20 games or more. And the number of headshots, I think, has been reduced dramatically because the players know that it won't be tolerated. I've heard mixed reviews on what's going on in the OHL in terms of the effectiveness of it. There are some who say it's not being called, and there are others who say basically hitting's being taken out of the game. We have a physical game. We want it to be physical, but we do not tolerate intentional shots to the head.
How much traveling do you have on your schedule this week, Gary?
Relative
to last week?
About the same.
No, wait, you were in Montreal, then you went to Washington, and
I'm here with you.
And you're here.
I'm contemplating a trip to Florida tomorrow morning to meet with the chief financial officers who are meeting in Fort Lauderdale.
When will that decision be made?
Probably in about an hour.
Back up to the office goes Gary Bettman. This has been the NHL Hour. Listen, thank you, callers. Fantastic for hanging with us today. We appreciate all of your ideas, all of your input, and all of your questions. We'll be back with you next Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. We want to give our thanks to Dan Cronin and Mike Trigani for working the boards. Dan here in New York and Mike in Toronto. Coming up next, NHL Home Ice. It is in the slot. I miss the guy. Gary, much as I love being here with you on Thursdays, I miss Phil and Jim Taddy. That's who's up next.
Let's listen.
That's it. That's it for this week. We'll see you next Thursday at 4 Eastern. Espo and Jim Taddy are next in the slot. Again, thanks for being with us, everybody.